what does it mean to be well? When you are truly healthy, how often do you actually notice that you're healthy? I suspect that most of us aren't all that aware when our bodies are healthy until they're not. That's when we realize what is missing. Whether you wake up with a pounding headache or you have unexplained lethargy or you ache so much even your hair hurts, it's often not until we are ill that we recognize what it means to be healthy. Good health is not the absence of illness. You can be free of illness and not actually be healthy, because good health requires a positive infusion of energy, right? You may not have a cold, you may not have the flu, you may not have COVID-19, but that doesn't make you healthy. If you lack sufficient energy and vigor to do things, you're not healthy. The truth is, though, that most of us, or many of us, passively choose to accept this semi-healthy state wherein we lack illness, but we also lack a positive physical fitness that enables us to move and do difficult things without being in terrible pain the following day. Years ago, before my wife and I had kids, we joined a church. And one day we were talking to the lead elder of this church, and he commented how many people that he had come across who would say something in reference to someone else who was very physically fit and therefore very attractive. I would do anything to look like that. And he said he had a standard response. No, you wouldn't. If you would do anything to look like that, you would actually do that thing. This is true of most good things, aren't they? Isn't it? If you and I would truly do anything for a good thing, whatever that good thing is, why aren't we already doing it? I mean, when most people say that they do anything to gain a certain thing, whether it's physical fitness or a healthy savings account or learning a new skill, what they really mean is that they would like to have that level of physical fitness or that savings account or that new skill, but they're not really willing to work for it. In other words, it's usually just a declaration of wishful thinking. Well, this is true of a healthy church as well. Many would love to have a healthy church, but a healthy church requires work. Good physical health doesn't simply happen, and neither does a healthy church environment. It must be cultivated. It must be worked for. It must be a priority for those who make up that particular church. So what is good health for a church? As with physical health, it is not merely the absence of something bad. A church is not a healthy church simply because it does not have unresolved conflict or doctrinal error or because it meets budget every year. There must be a positive infusion of something in order for that church to accomplish its mission. Without this positive thing, a church may well not be sick, but it also may not be healthy. So over these next 7 weeks, we're going to explore what it means to be a healthy church by looking at the 7 obligations New City Church has for its members. These 7 obligations are listed in our Constitution. Now, there are obligations that individual members have toward the church, but that's not our focus over these next 7 weeks. It's that what we as a people have toward one another. This morning, we're looking at the issue of qualified leaders. Specifically, what does it mean to have qualified leaders? And rather than looking at the characteristics of the qualifications for those who would serve as elders, we're going to look a little deeper at how they are to function within the church body. The first obligation the church has to its members is to ensure that the leaders of the church are actually qualified to lead. And as with physical health, qualification to lead God's church is more than simply the absence of illness. Those who would serve as elders in particular must have more qualifications to serve than not living in sin, right? There must be some positive infusion of something beyond not doing bad things. And it is that something that we're going to look at this morning. I want to point out that in our 11 years or so as a church, I've preached through a number of books of the Bible. Began with Mark and then Colossians, Genesis, Acts, the tiny book of Jude, 1 Corinthians, Revelation, Exodus, Galatians, John, and finally Joshua. This fall, we're going to work our way through 1 and 2 Timothy. I'm really excited for that. These books represent nearly 400 individual sermons. Well, in addition to these sermons through Bible books, there have been about 180 sermons that we've had as a church on various topics, whether it's the church calendar or miscellaneous sermons occasionally, or even a topical sermon. In fact, we've had 12 topical sermon series in our 11 years. They're usually much shorter than a book of the Bible. But of these 12 topical series, 11 of them have been on or related to what it means to be the church. Now, why on earth would we have 11 series in 11 years about what it means to be the church? And why would we be having a 12th one for the summer in just 11 years? Because it's that important. See, there is one thing Jesus said he would build, his church. He didn't say he would build his nonprofit. He didn't say he would build his social services organization. He didn't say he would build his after-school program. He didn't say he would build his food pantry. Now, these things are great. I would even say that these things are necessary. We need these things. We should support and we should partner with organizations that do these things, and we do. We're going to do it even more in the future. However, Jesus died in order to build his church, and we need to be reminded what the church is, or we will begin to assume what it is, and what is assumed will soon be forgotten. This morning, we will see the importance of the role of qualified leaders in the local church. Now, let me say up front that if you have ever been a part of a church that was unhealthy in any way, you can almost certainly point to the leadership of the church as the source of the problem. Whether the elders of that church failed to oversee the church properly through the mismanagement of funds, or they failed to protect the doctrinal integrity of the church, or they allowed or even engaged in sexual immorality, or they failed to address sin in their midst, the lack of qualified leadership most often is what leads to sickness in a church, or even to a church's complete crumbling and dissolution. See, this is what unqualified leadership can do to a church. Qualified leadership has a positive infusion of something that, when missing, fails the church and causes its problems to grow and become destructive to the work of Christ in and through that particular church. But here's the thing we often fail to see. As destructive as unqualified leadership can be, qualified leadership can be a blessing to that same degree. We see how great an impact qualified leadership can be to a church by how destructive unqualified leadership can be. The problem is we often fail to see the positive infusion of that something that qualified leadership is supposed to bring. And because we don't see it, we fail to recognize the blessing of qualified leadership. So let's correct that this morning. We're in 1 Peter 5. Let's look at the first five verses. Peter writes, "So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble." In verse 1, Peter identifies himself as a fellow elder. This is actually a remarkable statement from Peter, given his role in the early church. Peter was an apostle, and as such, he carried tremendous authority in God's church. Now, there were lots of folk in the early church who were called apostles. They had the function of apostles. Today, we would use the term missionary. Men like Barnabas, he became an apostle. But he wasn't an apostle the way the 12 were or the way that Paul was. Those 13 men were in the office of apostle, and as such, they had incredible authority. They were specifically chosen by the Lord Jesus for a particular foundational purpose. So as that sort of apostle, the one with tremendous authority in God's church, Peter wrote a portion of scripture. Peter was instrumental in the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15. And as Paul indicates in his letter to Philemon, as an apostle, he had the authority to bind the conscience of God's people. That is, had Paul ordered Philemon to do something, for Philemon to disobey the apostle would be equivalent to Philemon sinning against God. Well, praise the Lord, we don't have those kinds of apostles anymore. The office of apostle was a significant office in the earliest church, and it carried that tremendous authority. But Peter says he's a fellow elder. He acknowledges his apostolic authority because he says he's a witness of the sufferings of Christ. That's what the apostles were. They were formal witnesses to the crucified and resurrected Jesus. But Peter's emphasis here is on his role as an elder in Christ's church. He doesn't downplay his apostolicity, yet he understands that he stands united with all elders in all of the churches of Christ. He is one of them. Now, there's a reason he's choosing to identify with the other elders. He is exhorting them, and he's indicating his exhortation comes from solidarity with them. He tells them in verse 2 that they are to shepherd the flock of God, to pastor them. I want to remind you here that the noun form of the word pastor is not actually used of elders in the New Testament. In the New Testament, in the writings of Paul and the others, an elder or overseer is called to pastor, but is never called a pastor. Yet pastor, somehow, is the most common designation we have for the office today, but this is not the designation the New Testament uses. Peter tells his fellow elders to shepherd the flock of God. Now, there are three things we need to see here. First, notice whose flock it is. The flock of God. The church does not belong to the elders. It belongs to Jesus. Too often in this world, we see elders ruling over a church as if it were their private little kingdom. Look, there's only one king in the church of Jesus, and his name is Jesus. Any man who acts as if a church belongs to him is a man who is not fit to serve Christ's church as an elder. The church belongs to Jesus and to Jesus alone. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the elders are to shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Peter is writing to Christians in Asia Minor. That's a geographic area that's a little bit smaller than California, but you think ancient in terms of ancient transportation, that's a big area. He exhorts his fellow elders among them, that is, those who are in their local churches. In verse 2, he instructs these elders to shepherd the people who belong to God, not to them, and these people are to be among them. So we see that elders are among the believers, and the believers are among the elders. I've heard from far too many elders, not in this church, but from outside this church. I've heard from far too many elders over the years that I should not form close friendships with people in the church. That was their advice to me when I was first starting out. Now, part of the reason for this is the fact that many vocational elders, that is, those of us who are set apart and employed by the church, many see the local church as a stepping stone to something bigger and better. Right? The average length of time a man will serve a church as its lead elder is less than 4 years. Less than 4 years. If you assume you're going to be moving on after 3 years, why would you make close friendships? Breaking off those friendships hurts. Why risk it? But along with this, it can be dangerous for an elder to form friendships because friendships require transparency. And many simply don't like others knowing how they struggle. It's because this can be used against them. Even the best of men are men at best. This means that those of us who serve as elders struggle with sin. We're no different. The difficult part for me is being set apart in this role is I'm still in the midst of my own sanctification. So hear me, I will fail you. And you will fail me. This is what happens when sinners are together in a relationship. Problem is, in many churches, it is not safe to be known. Do you see Peter's assumption, though, about these churches he's writing to? He assumes it is safe to be open about one's struggles. This is the only way believers can be among the elders and the elders among the believers. The idea that the elders in a church would remain separate and aloof from the church is completely foreign to Peter. Remember, he is an apostle and is a fellow elder, which means Peter, of all people, is among the churches and the churches are among Peter. He's living life in community with them. He's not high and lifted up above the people, but he worships among them. He lives in community with them. But here's the thing about shepherds. I don't know if you knew this. They smell like sheep. This is one of the reasons shepherds in the ancient world weren't all that popular. If a shepherd doesn't smell like sheep, he's not actually a shepherd. I mean, he's like a fireman who never puts out a fire. Can you imagine someone being a lifeguard who never gets wet? What kind of lifeguard are you? The elders must be among the people. That's the second thing. The third thing we need to see is directly connected to shepherding God's flock is the need for shepherding. I mean, Peter wrote this back in chapter 2 of this letter. He said, for you, his recipients, you were straying like sheep, but now have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. He says, look, before faith in Jesus, you were straying like sheep, right? They're wandering all over with no real direction, doing whatever happened to be right in front of them. Peter says they now follow the shepherd and overseer of their souls. Now, another word for shepherd is pastor, one who guides, who protects his sheep. But he says Jesus is also their overseer. That's the word that's often translated as bishop. It's the term Paul uses in 1 Timothy 3 in his instructions to his fellow elders. The shepherd or overseer and elder are interchangeable words. But based on Peter's instructions here, he's saying that Jesus is the primary elder for his people. Well, it's interesting that Peter is the one passing on these instructions, given his interaction with Jesus in John 21. It was in John 21 that Jesus instructed Peter to feed his sheep. That instruction to Peter is now passed on to all elders throughout the world. Well, now that he's established his own status as a fellow elder and reminded his fellow elders that God's sheep belong to God and that they are merely caretakers of what belongs to God, Peter now tells them to exercise oversight. Again, the two terms for this office are overseer and elder. In the New Testament, these words are used interchangeably. Overseer is more a Greek term, elder is more a Jewish term, but both refer to the same basic function. An overseer or an elder leads and governs and protects and cares for those placed under his care. Now, oversight includes the idea of financial management. This is why the Council of Elders of New City Church establishes a budget. We make financial decisions for the church. This responsibility is also inherent in the very title overseer, but it includes the idea of caring for others. This is why the elders must shepherd the flock of God. They're not merely CEOs planning out the long-term vision for a church. They are to be involved in the daily life of the church. He tells them to shepherd the flock in verse 2, and then he explains that a primary way for the elders to do this is they must exercise this oversight, this care for the people. But Peter puts three qualifications on this oversight. First, he says, you must not oversee under compulsion, but willingly as God would have you. They must not be forced into this role. Now, it's kind of hard for us to imagine, but think of it from Peter's perspective. I mean, when Paul lists the qualifications for overseer in 1 Timothy 3, he begins by saying that if anyone aspires to the office of overseer, that is, he desires a noble task, it is a good thing to do. No one should ever serve as an overseer grudgingly. Instead, he says, elders must approach their service to the Lord and his church willingly. Why would they ever do it grudgingly? Well, in this letter, Peter has written about suffering for the Lord. You see, in times of persecution, it is the leaders of the church who tend to be targeted first. As God says in Zechariah, if you strike the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. When the church appoints a man as an elder, the church is placing him in a position that comes with inherent danger, particularly in times of hostile persecution. But there's another danger. We don't usually face that here in modern America. But this other danger is internal. Serving a church can be quite difficult. During the early days of COVID-19, at times it didn't seem to matter what decision the elders made. Criticism was often swift and rather harsh. It was concentrated few. I'm not saying the church was harsh. In fact, the harshest critics have moved on, but that stuff is hard. It is not easy making decisions that we know will elicit criticism, especially because that criticism is so often made to be personal. I mean, it wasn't that so-and-so merely disagreed with a decision. It's that JT's character was corrupt for having made that decision. That hurts. Peter understands this comes with the territory, so he exhorts his fellow elders to shepherd God's flock by exercising oversight, but not under compulsion. Instead, they must serve God and his church willingly as God would have them, and this includes absorbing the criticism that comes and pressing on in spite of it. But then he says they must exercise oversight, not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Now, in God's design, some elders are set apart vocationally. This means a vocational elder, a guy like me, works for the church and earns his living by the gospel. In the law of Moses, God commanded Israel to not muzzle an ox while it was treading out the grain. If you put a muzzle on an ox, it can't eat grain as it works. And he says, don't do that. In his letter to Timothy, Paul says that that's not really about the ox so much. Don't muzzle an ox, but it's actually about vocational elders who should be compensated for their work. This enables them to focus exclusively on church work rather than focusing on earning a living. Not all elders are financially compensated, but many are, so Peter exhorts his fellow elders to not serve for shameful gain. Far too many elders in churches today have the highest incomes in their congregations, drive the nicest cars, and live in the nicest homes. Peter says that's wrong. This doesn't mean that an elder should live in poverty, but it does mean an elder should not live in luxury. But pursuing shameful gain is not merely for paid elders. See, there are those who use their positions to drive business to their own companies, right? They think of the flock of God as a group of potential customers, whether they sell insurance or whatever. Peter says, don't do this. The church does not exist to enrich the elders. It's not merely financial gain that he's getting at, though. There are those for whom the office of elder is a status symbol. Rather than indicating their servanthood, it indicates their lofty position within the community. Their shameful gain is puffing up their sense of pride and accomplishment. Several years ago, we had a younger man approach our council of elders. He asked us to make him an elder because, in part, he thought it would improve his resume. We did not, just so you know. That's shameful gain. God's elders must exercise oversight with eagerness to serve, not in hopes of what it will gain them. We serve as elders because of what we can give. It is that something that we're driving toward here this morning. Well, the third manner in which they are to exercise oversight is by not domineering over those in their charge, but by being examples to the flock. The word for charge here actually indicates God has given a responsibility for his sheep to the elders. That means the elders are only stewards of what belongs to God, and God will not have his church bullied and treated roughly and abused. Those who are in this church have been given by God, and they must be treated as such. You are each a gift of God to this church. How dare we mishandle that? But notice again the emphasis on life together in the church, right? The elders are examples to the flock, not from above and certainly not from afar, but from a life lived together. See, too many elders want to keep their lives secret from the church, not willing to share their joys and their sorrows, their interests and hobbies. If you are unable to see how I and the other elders love our wives and our children, how we work day to day, how we deal with conflict, how we handle disappointment and sorrow, then how in the world are we going to be examples to you? Examples of what? Peter insists this isn't really possible, so we must live in such a way that we are examples to you. But notice that the examples are of Jesus. When has Jesus ever been domineering toward you or to me? The elders are to be examples of Jesus to those given into their care, and Jesus is never a jerk. Here's the amazing thing about all this. Peter says to his fellow elders in verse 4, when the chief shepherd appears, they will receive the unfading crown of glory. Did you catch that? When the chief shepherd, the senior pastor, the one who's actually in charge, the one who actually has authority. This church belongs to Jesus. You know how I know? He purchased it with his blood. That makes him the owner. He is the one to whom the elders, the under shepherds, will give an account. If the elders will shepherd the flock God has given them, exercising oversight willingly, not under compulsion, eagerly, not for shameful gain, being examples to the flock and not domineering over them, Peter says something awaits. That is, when Jesus appears, when Jesus comes back to this world, he says those elders will receive the unfading crown of glory. I don't know what that is, but I want it. Now, this reference to glory connects back to verse 1. Peter says he's a fellow elder, acknowledges apostolicity. He's a witness of the sufferings of Christ. But he says he is a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed. When will it be revealed? When the chief shepherd appears, when Jesus comes back. So hear his point. The elders must serve the Lord in his church with eternity in view. We must be in this for the long haul, not for a few years until another opportunity comes along. We must be working toward the future reality of resurrection and of the new earth. This cannot happen if we think of the church as our personal kingdom or as our stepping stone to career advancement. A man cannot serve the church with eternity in view if he's only thinking of serving 2 or 3 years before looking for bigger and better gigs somewhere. You can't do it. In light of the return of the chief shepherd, elders must recognize their role in the work of Jesus building his church is actually a rather small one. I mean, I've been at this for 11 years now. How much time do I have left? 15 years? 20? If I have 20 years left, that means I will have spent 31 years of my life serving this church. Out of the 2,000 years Jesus has been building his church, and not just here at the corner of Spencer and Plainfield. He's been building his church all over the world. That alone ought to be enough for me to know the church ain't about me. It's about Jesus. Elders must serve with this long view. We must serve in light of the Lord's return. And if we will serve with eternity in view, we will receive this unfading crown of glory as we then participate with the Lord Jesus as he rules over the new earth forever and ever. Do you see what's at stake? And here I'm actually speaking to my fellow elders. If we will shepherd this church well, recognizing that we are not here for what the church can give us, but for what we can give the church, then we will receive this unfading crown of glory. But if we will not, we won't receive it. The promise of the return of the chief shepherd is not just for elders, though. It's for all of us. In verse 5, Peter addresses the youngers. I like that. I made that word up. He says those who are younger, the youngers, you youngins. That just means all those who are not elders in the church, regardless of age. He tells the church to be subject to the elders. Now, the word for subject here has the idea of following the leadership of the elders. It doesn't really have any idea of obedience here. There's other words he could have used if he meant obey, as if we have absolute final authority. It is a voluntary submission to the leadership of another. This is why we say that here at New City, the elders lead ministry. The deacons facilitate or they organize ministry, but it is the church who engages in ministry. To follow the leadership of the elders is what Peter is actually getting at here. But this is only possible if you and I, if all of us, will do what he says next. He says you must clothe yourselves with humility. Remember, this instruction is for everyone, regardless of your role in the church. Each one of us must clothe ourselves with humility. He says the reason is God opposes the proud, but actively gives grace to the humble. I don't know about you, but I think grace is a rather good thing to receive. There's only one way to get it. See, at the end of the day, the church is about Jesus. This is why Paul told the church in Philippi to be like Jesus in a very particular way. Though Jesus is God in every way and is therefore worthy of all honor and glory and praise and worship, Jesus did not act in such a manner. Instead, because Jesus is God in every way, he humbled himself and took on the form of a servant and submitted himself to his Father and went to the cross. And yet Jesus is also fully human. And I promise you, no human has ever desired to be crucified. You know, I'm kind of bored. You guys want to go get crucified or something? No one ever said that. Yet Jesus clothed himself with humility for the good of others. By embracing humility, he allowed himself to be nailed to a cross, to die for the sins of his people, and then God highly exalted him by raising him from the dead. This is what Peter says we must do. The whole church must look like Jesus, and that requires that we clothe ourselves with humility toward one another, which means none of us can get uppity with each other. None of us can think that he or she is more important than the other. Even when acting in the role God has given us in the church, we must clothe ourselves with humility because this is how we will look like Jesus. See, a church, and I mean this church, may well not be sick. That is, this church may not be filled with gossip and backbiting and animosity. It may not be filled with all kinds of sin. Oh, don't get me wrong. It is filled with sinners struggling with sin, but they're struggling, right? So we can't get rid of the struggle. It's when we stop struggling with sin that we have the problem. If this church is not filled with this positive infusion of energy, then like the human body, it is not actually healthy. See, good health is more than the absence of illness. There must be energy and vitality. Now, in the context of the church, what is this positive something we're talking about? I really hope this is no great surprise this morning. That positive presence of something the elders are to offer the church is Jesus. I hope that didn't surprise you. If the elders will lead like Jesus, and if the elders will serve like Jesus, and if the elders will speak like Jesus, and if the elders will point you to Jesus, then this church will be blessed in the greatest way possible. You will get more of Jesus. What you don't need is more of us. What you don't need is some program. What you don't need is clever advice. What you need is Jesus. No, I'm not suggesting that if you just trust Jesus, all your problems will go away. That's not how this works. Pain and suffering are part of life and will be until the Lord returns. I'm saying that if you will look to Jesus in the midst of your pain and in the midst of your suffering, you will find the strength to endure. See, sometimes, and you need to hear this, sometimes all you can do is endure. Sometimes the pain is overwhelming and paralyzes you, and the only thing you can do is endure it. Looking to Jesus in the midst of pain and suffering doesn't magically take the pain away. It doesn't automatically turn your suffering into rainbows and puppies and, oh, I don't know, a plate of perfectly cooked bacon. It's the best thing I can think of. Sometimes life is hard and all you can do is endure. But did you catch how our text started this morning? So, I exhort the elders among you. He's connecting his instructions to the elders to what he has been writing about all along. Look back at chapter 4, verse 12. He said, beloved, do not be, this is right before what our text. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. You too have to have eternity in view. It's the only way we're going to get through this life. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, it hurts, but you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. And then the very last verse of chapter 4, immediately before our verse, therefore let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good. Don't be surprised when life is hard. Peter says that's actually normal. That's actually normal. Don't be surprised if people look down on you for following Jesus. That too is normal. Do you see Peter's perspective here? He points them to that future reality when the glory of Jesus is revealed. He's coming back for us, and when he does, he will change everything. All that is bad and broken in this world will be undone. However, looking to Jesus doesn't automatically solve your financial troubles. It doesn't make your anxiety disappear. It doesn't magically resolve your depression. It doesn't mean your medical test results will suddenly reverse themselves. It means Jesus is the one who can get you through the hardship. This is why it is so very important for this church to have qualified leaders Elders who heed Peter's instructions will have eternity in view. They will be looking for the return of New City's chief shepherd, her senior pastor, the one who will one day end all suffering and pain. If we will fulfill our obligation to only have qualified leadership, then we will point the church to the one who will, can and will eventually end all our pain. See, it's one thing for this church to not be sick. It's quite another for this church to be well, to be healthy. When the elders of the church are pointing this church to Jesus in all that we do or say, and the manner in which we do it and say it, we are infusing this church with the positive presence of Jesus. You and I need more of Jesus in our lives, not less. When the church is fulfilling its obligation to have qualified leadership, the elders are pointing each one of us and each other to Jesus. There is no greater blessing we can give you than Jesus. Too many churches have this idea that elders are little more than gatekeepers or hall monitors, right? They think elders simply maintain order and get you when you screw up, right? Step out of line, you got to go to the principal's office. That is so very far from the truth. It was last week we celebrated Pentecost, the day the Lord sent his Spirit to dwell among us. God did not entrust his churches to mere hall monitors. He gave his life for his church. Why would he entrust it to a hall monitor? Within his churches throughout the world, God has raised up elders who oversee his church, who shepherd his people. This is a gift from God to his people that through the elders, he would bring even more blessing as the elders guide them to Jesus. Every week I get up and I talk about Jesus. You know why? I got nothing else. And it's not that that's all I have and that's not much, but that's all you need. I'm giving you every week the thing you need. What you and I need is Jesus. When we have qualified leadership in this church, you are getting more of Jesus. That's our obligation to one another.